Hello, everybody, and welcome to the podcast. This is the Defender of Caregivers podcast number 5. My name is Lon Kiefer. I am your host. I'm also known as Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, and my expertise is understanding the caregiver personality and working to develop what I call pro-per relationships, where we forge better, more collaborative, more open communications between professional caregivers and personal family caregivers. And also the same strategy would hold for people that are leaders in an industry where they are serving and leading caregivers, and understanding that working with them from a personal side of things rather than a professional side of strategy is sometimes maybe a better approach. By way of full disclosure, today this podcast is being recorded while I'm stuck in traffic on the Washington Beltway trying to get to Baltimore after a day in the field visiting some caregivers and some senior living providers. Me and Chance, the Wonder Dog, have been driving around in the Doc Mobile, and we had a very emotionally uplifting and rewarding couple of days on the road. But I was supposed to do this podcast and get it sent to a gentleman at Radio St. Pete that is helping me, Joe Bordow. Shout out to Joe. And because of the traffic and some other things, I didn't get to get settled down and do it. So I don't know whether this is going to be... Watch this turn out to be the best podcast we've ever done, and I should do them all while I'm driving in a car. But so here's the interesting thing is that, you know, I'm going to tie this into a parallel of what I wanted to talk about today, which is good intentions and bad outcomes, or good intentions and bad decisions, or whatever you want to call it. So today's "you might be a caregiver if" statement would be, you might be a caregiver if you meant well, even if you didn't do well or do what you were doing well. And you know, try and get lighthearted a little bit here. We're not trying to be overly critical about any of this, but best of intentions can sometimes get you in the worst of situations. And I'm going to tell a story that literally happened today. This was going to be my topic anyway, but I would have gone a different route because, you know, as I said before, these podcasts are not necessarily scripted. They're sort of outlined, and I have a story that I might want to tell, you know, that I've learned over the years, or a perspective I want to share. But I do enough preparation that there's a structure to it, and today driving down the road, I don't have that structure, and I don't have that kind of support. So, you know, I'm always trying to tie it back to analogies, and, you know, this would be kind of one of those days where the systems just kind of failed you, and you got to do things by the seat of your pants. So the benefit of that is that I've been trying to figure out how to get into the podcast more quickly and get through upcoming dates and announcements and sponsorships and things like that. So I have no choice but to do it more quickly today because I don't have anything written down. The other thing I noticed is that, you know, these podcasts are downloaded over time. You know, people might start listening, but then later others join in, and the numbers continue to grow. And when I talk about an upcoming date, by the time people have heard the podcast for one of my speaking events or training or what have you, the dates are long past. So I'm probably going to dispense with that a little bit. If you'll promise to remind yourself, or allow me to just remind you that you know, one of the ways that I help spread the word of Doc and help create these alliances and better relationships between the professional side of caregiving and the personal family side of caregiving is through humor-based speaking events and training and that sort of thing. I know from memory that I've got a event coming up on May 8th at Mercy Medical Center to work with a bunch of there. It's an awards banquet. And then I know on May 10th, in affiliation with Health Facilities Association of Maryland, I'm doing some caregiver-oriented sales training. And I don't remember a whole lot of the specific dates beyond that, so we'll let you off easy on this. I do know I'm very excited that my son is getting married in June, and I have, for maybe the first time in my life, committed to being fully in the moment and not having 400 balls in the air at one time, and I'm doing very little in the way of anything in June so that I can go down to Jacksonville and be there for my son's wedding and stick around and watch the homestead and be a caregiver to his black lab Reef and his chocolate lab Bama. So I'm not going to be, I mean, I'm still going to be doing all the things that I do in the virtual world, but I won't be out visiting people in the field. So today, I was in the, yesterday I was in the Williamsburg, Virginia area, and Chance and I were out, and we had the first chance to take Chance, and meet some folks, and, you know, he's just not ready. If you don't know the story of Chance, I got in trouble on Facebook when I basically said that I was frustrated with the dog animal rescue industry because nobody would give me a dog to take care of. And the reality is that their vetting process was so exhaustive, and you know, I wouldn't even try in some case. You know, I'd say they needed a 4-foot fence of 1,000. You know, I didn't have that, and I wanted a little dog that I could travel around in an RV with. And anyway, I found the Baywater Animal Rescue folks in Eastern Maryland that were extremely reasonable. They wanted to meet me. They wanted to do a brief, you know, internet background check and make sure of what my intentions were. And so I got Chance, and he is a perfect pet. For me, he's great company, he's got a great personality, he's high energy, he's fun, but I don't know that he's ever going to fully become a therapy dog because, you know, he means well, he's got the best of intentions, but he's so happy and so friendly that he's a little bit too excitable, and I'm afraid that, you know, if he was to go into a community and meet, I hate the term, but the proverbial little old lady, you know, who might have fragile skin, and, I mean, you know how that goes with a dog that still has a lot of puppy in them. But he's a phenomenal dog, and he means well, even if he doesn't always do well. And on the road, you know, I let him meet. The ironic thing is that, in a lot of ways, I go around and I serve the caregivers. I don't really focus on the residents or the family members that everybody is caring for because, you know, that's the caregiver that is doing that, and my thing is supporting the caregivers. So the irony is that I think he'd be a great therapy dog for family members and employees, and that's what I've done now. I'm trying to break him in slow. So, you know, he went down and met a couple of clients in the Williamsburg area and it was just a lot of fun to start taking him out there. But he has the best of intentions, but he doesn't necessarily get the best results. And that's kind of what I want to talk about here today. I want to talk about, I always bring this to you by a You Might Be a Caregiver If statement, and I remind you to go to youmightbeacaregiverif.com if you want to get those statements sent to you in the mail, via email on a weekly basis. They're kind of thought-provoking and humorous. I get great feedback from them. I also bring, every podcast comes from the perspective of a caregiver distortion. And today the distortion I'm going to be talking about is called emotional reasoning. And I know these all by heart. I talk about them all the time. But I can't read from you the written portion about emotional reasoning. But it's basically where because you feel something really profoundly and you're really emotional about it, you convince yourself that it's real. And it may not be, but you feel it so much that you're just, how could it not be real? I feel it, therefore it must be true. And, you know, I've given some examples in my personal life, and I remember as a single dad who was trying to do everything, and my daughter, this was a scene in the play, in our play, Defending the Caregiver, which we do as a fundraiser, there was this scene. The play's evolved, and I don't do the scene anymore because my daughter's older, but we got this beautiful prom dress for her, and then it needed to be altered, and the alterations got messed up, and she cried, and then I cried, and, you know, and it just turned into this whole thing, like, you know, I'm a failure as a dad, because I just don't understand what it's like to raise a girl, and, you know, and the whole thing, and I'm telling you, I felt it. I was very upset for quite a while, and then what I noticed is that, you know, my daughter got over it. She went on to the prom. She didn't think another thing of it. The irony is that, you know, these girls go to these proms, then they have fun, and this was a really long dress, and to make a long story short, by the end of the prom, the train of this dress was half ruined and would have had to been, you know, cut and altered again if the dress was ever going to be used again, and it just seemed in the end how insignificant it was, and how it just wasn't real to feel that way. And I run into emotional reasoning all the time, and I run into it on both the professional and the personal side of things, and I ran into them, these things a lot, when I was in the field this week, and calling on the professional side, and one of the communities I was calling on was having a family event, and they, you know, the way they were staging the room just didn't come together they wanted, and they had to, you know, do something, the coffee maker, if I remember correctly, that was provided wouldn't get hot, so they went and they improvised, like we all do, and they went out and got, you know, a coffee maker that they had in the building, and somebody else lived close and went home and got their coffee maker, and, you know, so they improvised, and they said, you know, they started down the road of, you know, the evening's going to be a disaster, and this is just the first of, you know, a never-ending series of failures. And what I see over and over again is just how much these folks invest in themselves in their events so that they can serve the people that they serve in their communities, and that they want to, and I don't just mean the community that they work in, but I mean the larger community, and how they want everything to be perfect. And so one of the people that I called on, I'm not going to say his name, but I am going to have him on his podcast in the near future. He took his grandmother's home, where he and the family put together care for her on her, you know, last days until she passed away. And then they converted it into a small assisted living facility. And I'm going to introduce you to him in a future podcast. And this is a young guy. He's 28 years old, and he's done all this. I mean, he went through the regulatory hoops, and he's just really very grounded in what he's doing and why he's doing it. And, you know, we had a little conversation about the emotional journey that he went on. And the whole time that I was talking to him, he was looking out the window, because you would never know it. This is a beautiful community, and it's in a residential neighborhood, and it blends in well. It doesn't, you know, I drove past it, as a matter of fact, today in the Docmobile when I called on him. And we were going to do the podcast, and, you know, circumstances changed and he couldn't do it. So now I'm scrambling and stuck in traffic and doing a slightly different version of the podcast. But the whole time that I was talking to him, he's looking out his window at his driveway, because the one challenge he has, particularly a change of shift or families are visiting, is that he doesn't have a lot of parking space. And he doesn't want his neighbors to get upset with him if people park on the road or what have you. And almost fixate on what was going on in his parking lot. You know, meanwhile, he's got all these other amazing things that are going on. And as I walked around with him, he knows all of his residents and families by name, and he's, you know, just serving people all day long from a standpoint of doing some real nurturing, you know, touchy-feely kind of intimate, if you will, leadership and service to the people that both work there and that live there. And yet he's fixated on this parking lot, and that somebody's going to get upset because a car's parked in the road. And, you know, I told him, I said, you know that's not real, right? And he said, what? And then I said, no, they get, you know, happy neighbors make for good business and all this stuff. And I totally agree with everything he's saying, except for one thing, that if there is a slight issue and it has to be addressed, it doesn't affect the whole scenario of everything that he's doing. But it becomes emotional. And you start to believe the stories you tell yourself. And right before I called on him today, I had to get gas. And I was in a... he's in a part of, Northern Virginia that is, a hustle-bustle, very wealthy area, a lot of traffic, and beautiful homes and things like that. And one of the things that I found today is that it's hard to find diesel gas. So I was running late for when I originally intended to be there, and, I was doing some of it for myself. Oh, great, now you're messing up the whole day, and you're not going to get to your next appointment, and I finally found a gas station. I went to four gas stations before I found one that actually had diesel fuel, and until today, I didn't even realize that might be an issue. So I'm pumping gas. Now, mind you, I'm driving a 23-foot RV, big old white whale RV with a 8-foot bear on the side of it and a big swoop I'm driving my car and I wave my right arm like in a swoop so that you could see me, as if you could see me describe the swoop on the side of the vehicle with the fender of caregivers on it. So that's what I'm standing next to him as I'm pumping gas, and the guy next to me says, do you take care of the elderly? And I said, well, yes and no. I serve everybody that needs care, whether they're elderly or young or had a medical illness or what have you. But the way I serve them is by serving the people that care for them. I'm the defender of caregivers, and I try and support caregivers, whether they be professional or personal. And more importantly, I try and get them to communicate better. And so now, what happened, right? This happens to me everywhere I go. So I'm in a conversation with this guy, and he's telling me about his 90-year-old mother and his 92-year-old father and how he takes care of them and how he sort of was at a crossroads in his career, and rather than sort of, start over in a new career and commit all the financial resources towards providing care for his family, he decided, he and his siblings decided that he would move in with them and be their caregiver. And this has been going on for, if I'm correct, he said this is the third year that he's been doing it. And then he said, in a real kind of emotional reasoning sense, he believes that no one can care for his family the way he can care for his family. And remember, I'm the defender of caregivers here, and I am not trying to force anyone into any kind of a decision. I just want people to make rational decisions, and I want to help them in a humorous way call themselves out on when they're making irrational decisions or drawing irrational conclusions. And, I didn't do it right away, but later on I circled around and I said, no one can love your parents the way you love them, but they might be able to care for them the way you care for them, or even better, because best of intentions don't always make for the best of circumstances. And he kind of brushed that off, and which is fine. I expected that. That's part of what happens when you're in this sort of rationality mode or irrationality mode. And we all believe what we believe. And, who am I to take that away from them? I just want to have a dialogue that there's other ways sometimes to look at them, and no one way is ever always right. So as I'm talking to him, he's taking the approach of, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. And he's totally missed that I'm working both sides of this equation, that I want to change, or help change the outlook and in some ways the behavior on the family caregiver side of things, as much as I want to change it on the professional side of things. But his focus was purely that, you got to go out there and fix those professional people because they just don't care. You know, they're all about the money, and they don't care the way we, the family does. And, you know, I let that go. I'm not going to get defensive about that, just like I wouldn't be aggressive about talking about, you know, what might be an emotional reasoning of the care that he's providing, because I don't know anything about his situation. So I just let the conversation evolve, and then it took an interesting turn. And he said, but I tell you what, you know, because I had told him that, you know, that the stress of being a caregiver and the role confusion of it, and that it can, you know, that it can ultimately end up where people feel trapped and that they have no other decisions that they can make. And part of it is that belief that, you know, the professional side just doesn't care. And mind you, they care in most cases a great deal. They can't have the love of your mother the same that you have, but they can have a very strong commitment to the care that they provide. And I feel like I'm getting a little circular and around John's barn, as they would say, here in getting to the point. But he pointed out, and he readily agreed, that it really gets tough to make good decisions with the stress that you're taking care of taking care of other people. And he pointed out that whether he likes it or not, he might have to address getting help, either in the home or somewhere else, because he was in the shower the other day, and he almost fell while helping his mom out of the shower. Now, what he then pointed out is that in the last 3 years, in caring for his family, he's gained about 40 pounds, and he just can't do things the way he used to, and he started saying things like, I really mean well, but I know my game's starting to slip. And then I said, so can we go back to the earlier conversation? Because there's this thing called emotional reasoning that's going on, and you started with this belief that you were the only one that could do this, and that's noble, but now you're seeing that you can't even do it the way you intended to do it originally, and you're left with, you know, a trap. You either keep doing it, or you let yourself out of the trap and you let some people help you. And all I would ask is that you just recognize that. You know, I talk about awareness, acceptance, and allowance. And just have the awareness that you, in our conversation, told me what I'm now reflecting back to you, and that is that your good intentions and your love may not be enough, because you can't do, in some cases, things to the level that you expect for yourself. So, you know, what's the way out of it? And that's just a conversation. That's when you move into acceptance, you know, what can change, and perhaps all the way to allowance, you know, who can I allow to join me on this journey? But emotional reasoning can be a very dangerous thing, and just because you feel it emotionally does not mean that it's true or that it's rational. Now, a little humor on this. I've actually had this conversation said to me, because the other thing that happens is that, you know, we make commitments to our loved ones and to ourselves when circumstances are better than they might be today, when we have to make difficult decisions. For example, you know, I always tell the story of the Thanksgiving promise, you know, where your family gets together on Thanksgiving and, you know, you have a great meal and a good time, and you've had a couple of bottles of wine, you know, not you individually, but as the family, so maybe you've had a couple of glasses of wine, and then your mom says something like, oh, don't worry about it, you know, y'all are just going to stick me in a nursing home someday, and, you know, and then the... So, because at the core of this, as I go around the country and speak, Defender of Caregivers is a serious topic, but shared in a humorous way. So I want to share you a humorous anecdote that happened with a family that ties into emotional reasoning. And I call it the Thanksgiving promise. So, you know, we all do this. You know, we make commitments and we make promises to our loved ones with the best of intentions. And, you know, so imagine yourself at Thanksgiving dinner. Everybody's come together and you're having a decent, you know, holiday time, good family, good cheer, good food. And you've had a couple of bottles of wine as a family, you know, passing it around, what have you. And you've had two or three glasses of wine yourself. And in the world of marketing, everyone talks about your avatar. You know, who is it that you are communicating with? Keep that person in mind when you're communicating with them. And the avatar for a caregiver decision maker is a woman who's between, say, 40 and 60 years old, and she's got a parent who is in need of help, or a special needs child, or a sibling, or a spouse. She's still working, and she's trying to balance all of these things, and the caregiving role is interfering with work, and the work role is certainly not, well, maybe it is viewed as it's interfering caregiving, but it's driving, you know, you need the money coming in to keep everything afloat. So that's the avatar in the marketing world. And I just mentioned that detour because the Thanksgiving promise is that woman at Thanksgiving with two or three glasses of wine in her after dinner, and they're just talking, and her elderly mom says, "Oh, don't worry about it, you know, won't be too long, I'll just be in a nursing home, and you won't have to bring me over here for Thanksgiving dinner, you just have to come visit me in the afternoon, and then go on about your, and get on with your life." And our avatar, our typical, if you will, caregiver, with two or three glasses of wine in her, says, "Oh, mom, that's ridiculous, you know I would never let that happen to you. You're not going to go into a nursing home. I'll take care of you at home." Well, that's all well and good when it's not real. But then years later, when a circumstance comes up, whether it's, you know, dementia or a fall or, you know, just some other out-of-the-blue medical condition, and now it's a real scenario, you know, that promise you made years ago with a couple of glasses of wine rings true, and you feel emotionally connected to that promise, no matter how unrealistic or irrational it might be. So you stick to that. You don't give yourself the opportunity to give it a more rational viewpoint. And again, I'm not lobbying for let someone else do it. I am pointing out, and I say this repeatedly, and really it's kind of the cornerstone of the play, is that people that think of themselves as a spouse but act as a caregiver get caught up in this distortion, and some of the roles and the duties they're doing is more caregiver things than spouse. So you're always first, you know, a spouse or a family member. But if you're primarily focused on caregiver duties and not spousal duties, there starts to be a shift. And if you're able to recognize that shift, and you're able to shift your own thinking from, okay, this is not a spousal duty, this is a caregiver duty for my spouse, and then you can embrace allowing other people into your world to help you, you then get to sort of have a renew your vows as a spouse, because you now can concentrate on spousal things, and you now can allow yourself, or family things. And you can now allow yourself something that you won't when you're stuck in caregiver role. And that is that there's another way, that there's a disagreement. Like, husbands and wives have disagreements, and they sort it out, they figure it out, they figure out what they're going to do to move forward. Parents and children have disagreements. They don't agree 100% on what is the right path. And they sort it out, and somebody might win and somebody might lose, but they live the fight again. Well, when we get in this caregiver mode and fail to recognize, but think we're a spouse, see, it just gets twisted, even as I'm explaining it. But if you don't recognize you're in caregiver mode, because see, once you start getting in caregiver mode, there can be no longer any of this, you know, disagreement, this argument, because you start feeling, you actually care more for the person but respect their perspective less, in the sense that you believe nothing in their world can be wrong or be challenged. Or so there's this one path that you have to be on, and there's no room for that spousal or parent-child argument where there might be a different way. And you get kind of stuck in that mode. So here's a funny version of the same story. I literally had this story told to me one night in a community after defending the caregiver, where I, you know, I talked to families, and I had a family member come up to me, and she said to me, "You know your story about Thanksgiving?" And I said, "Yeah, I mean it's real." And she goes, "Well, this is how it played out in my family. You know, we had that same conversation," and I said, "Oh, Mom." No, this was said to me, and I say it to you with lightness in my heart. Said, "Oh, Mom, don't worry. If anybody's going to neglect you, it's going to be me." You know, but even in humor, you know, so, you know, once again, I'm going to be the one taking care of you, and I recognize it's not going to be perfect. But, you know, even in humor, the emotional reasoning there was that it had to be the family member. And I just want to invite you to understanding that, you know, in relationships, there's sometimes arguments and disagreements about what's the way to do things. And I'm not trying to have that argument and suggest that there's a different or a better way. I'm just trying to invite you to recognize and be aware of the fact that sometimes your best of intentions aren't enough, and that there are other ways. And that if you go back in time before you were, you know, sort of volunteered for or deputized into or sucked into or whatever you want to call it, the caregiver role, you used to sometimes seek those arguments or those debates because you were thinking as a spouse. And the fact that you can't think of another way any longer suggests to me that you're getting caught up into caregiver thinking. And there might be another way if you can recognize emotional reasoning so that you can start to let it go. So let's go back to the gas station and the gentleman that was standing there and telling me that he's gained 40 pounds over the last couple of years and that he's not really safe. He can't physically move. And by the way, he's in his mid-60s now. You know, things are changing for him. And his final words to me were, "I'm going to follow you on Facebook," and, you know, and at this point, Chance is barking through the window at us because, you know, he ain't ready. He's got the best of intentions. But he said, "I'm going to follow you on Facebook, and, you know, I might reach out to you because, you know, I recognize that we have the resources, and maybe I can, you know, be safer while I continue to take care of my parents." So he had in a moment, and I think it was genuine, where he saw a middle ground, where he can continue to fulfill the role that he thinks he needs to fulfill, but that he can maybe do it both with the best of intentions and maybe a better method. So you got spared because this is a rolling, driving podcast today. I didn't give you the whole sponsors because I don't want to do any of them a disservice by not reading from the copy. But I will point out that these shared experiences that we have, our opinions, our reviews, are very valuable. And one of my sponsors is seniorlife.co, where you can go and rate communities and leave a review. And the world of the internet, when people reach out, is wonderful for the resources that it provides. But as I've said before, and I'll do it much more succinctly this time, it can also be a dangerous place where you're not really sure the information that you're getting and who you're getting it from. So please, I encourage you to both share your experiences with others, learn about others' experiences, and when you're online out there and you're trying to find resources, drill down a little bit deeper and talk to the actual people that you're going to work with after you've looked at some reviews about them. And you don't need a referral source to send you to these people and then, frankly, nag you with their follow-up to find out when you're going to make a decision. You can much more freely and much more comfortably communicate directly with the person, well, maybe not the person, but the organization that you might want to have the, your, you know, take a caregiver's shared journey with by allowing them into your life. So seniorlife.co is a place where you can leave those reviews, a place where you can read those reviews, and that is so helpful to the other people that might be walking your path. So that's about it for today. A disjointed, interrupted, and I'm still in heavy traffic. But we got through this, and I got some things that I wanted to share off of my mind. And I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you share this with people. Hope you visit us on Facebook at Defender of Caregivers and give us a like or a mention. And most of all, keep me on my toes. If you don't like a direction I'm going, let me know. If you want me to talk about a specific topic or issue, let me know that too. Heck, if you want to come on the podcast, you know, and tell me your story, but it has to be from the caregiver perspective, not the person you're caring for perspective. You know, your emotional journey, how you made decisions, how you found yourself in certain traps, how you got out of them, where you took your comfort, where you got your confident information, you know, the story that you went through. Because what ends up happening, remember we did a podcast earlier on romancing the past, is that we sometimes get fixated on telling the story of you know, your caregiver responsibilities and duties, for lack of a better word, where I'm trying to focus, because everybody's circumstances are so different, they may not benefit from the actual task or duty-oriented aspect of your journey, but they will definitely benefit from the emotional and decision-making side of your journey. And I want to leave you with this, and I want to also remind you again, my name is Doc, the Defender of Caregivers, but I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV, and I'm not trying to give medical advice. At best, what I'm giving you is the perspective of someone that has been a nurse for 30-plus years and has been serving caregivers both professionally as a leader and as a provider of services for personal family caregivers. And somebody that has just immersed himself in these conversations and reading literature. So what I'm sharing with you are anecdotal observations and some research and literature review, but it is not medical advice. But I will leave you with this. The power of meditation and the power of slowing things down so that you can look at them from a new perspective and benefit from that new perspective. And one of the ways that you can do that is through the caregiver's vow. So if you would, let's repeat after me the caregiver's vow. I am proud of who and what I am. I'm a caregiver. I live in awareness that I take satisfaction in pleasing others and sometimes overcommit. I accept that some things I cannot change and that I am not perfect. I will allow others to help and join me on my caregiver's journey. And most of all, I will honor myself as I care for others. Before I go, I just want to remind you again, in everything you do, think also of you. And the final note, thank you for caring. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye now.